after listening back over the last show, wow, that was probably too much information for one show, and I felt like I talked way too fast. And I want to be more simple, more clear, and more direct. And that's, like I said, that's the reason I'm doing these. Welcome to Grace Junkies. Today, this is a layman's regurgitation of apologetics. I'm going with that for right now. Today, I would like to briefly go over, very briefly, very simply, go over the five forms of apologetics, or five approaches to apologetics. In episode one, we talked about what apologetics is. Episode two, I talked about the different stages of philosophy and modernism, pre-modernism and postmodernism. And so now I'd like to get into actual apologetics and talk about the five different approaches. And then going forward, maybe we'll get into a little deeper some of the methods and stuff. I don't know where we're going to go from here. I just know what I'm going to do today, which is this. Now, the first one I'd like to talk about is called evidentialism. And as you can probably tell from the name, it's based in evidence. It's arguing or defending. When people say arguing, they don't mean fighting. Heated discussion. They really just mean defending. It's defending the faith from evidence. This can be from many different places. It can be from science. We can talk about irreducible complexity of the DNA strand and how it's impossible basically to come up with any rational solution of the DNA strand, at least at this point, that does not point directly to a design, a designer. There is no current theory of how the DNA strand could have developed or evolved that will stand the scrutiny of any serious scientist. You can talk about evidence from creation and the Big Bang theory. The huge leap has been made because prior to Einstein's theory of evolution and the Big Bang theory itself, the universe was viewed by scientists to be eternal. In fact, going back to the Greek philosophy, they believed the universe was eternal. The Hindu religion also believed in an eternal type of universe. And it is only really Christianity, or specifically Judaism, that taught that there was a definite beginning to the universe. Now, the science, though, itself, there was a survey done of scientists, I believe it was in, I don't remember now, in the 50s, I believe, and they were asked to write down how old the universe was, that they believed the universe was, and it came back, 90% of them said that it was eternal, that there was no age to it, and some of that effect. However, if you were to do that same thing today, you would come up with most everybody agreeing to 4 to 6 billion years old. And that is a huge leap. As Gerald Schroeder said, there is no larger leap in science than this one towards the Bible, towards creationism, because it went from there was no creation to, oh, yes, there was. Well, there was no beginning to, yes, there was a beginning. And that's what the Bible says is in the beginning. And Gerald Schroeder is a brilliant scientist. His academic accreditations are just impeccable. I mean, he's MIT grad, bachelor, master's, doctorates. It's just incredible work that this guy's done. And he's, I don't think he's a Christian. I think he's just a Jew, Hebrew, or I mean, yeah, Jew in faith, but I don't know that for sure. And, but is the book that he wrote called The Science of God, I think he wrote it in 73, really explores the idea of how the earth was created in 6 days, 6 billion years ago, and how both are, how it's not contradicted. It's over my head. Trust me. It was way over my head. But, he does a good job of explaining through the theory of relativity how the earth is both 6 billion years old and, or the universe is 6 billion years old, and that it was created in 6 days. And it has to do with the theory of relativity and speed of light and blah, blah, blah. That's not the point. The point is I gave you the reference, The Science of God by Gerald L. Schroeder. And so that's an argument through evidentialism. And that's, and you can use, and this, people who use this method can use a rock or a tree, and they can start conversations or defend their faith through the use of evidentialism and everyday objects, the sky, you know, the order of the universe. What was the other big one I wanted to mention? The fine tuning of the universe, and how if the speed of light was different, that just by a millisecond, or I don't know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but if the speed of light was different than it is, no life could exist. And things like this, the fine tuning of the universe fits into evidentialism. Now, another one under evidentialism, as far as a reference is concerned, is Norm Geisler. He's awesome. A weakness of evidentialism is it doesn't really approach or address the supernatural. It doesn't really. It pretty much stays in this secular realm of science for the most part. And it's important, like I said at the beginning of this series, and that is that we always lead back to the supernatural experience with Christ, supernatural and involvement of Christ in our lives and the relationship and the forgiveness of sins. And that is something that arguing through evidentialism doesn't really get you to easily. You have to sort of plan that trip, if you know what I mean. Okay, so Norm Geisler, Gerald L. Schroeder. Okay, let's move on. The next kind of apologetics approach is presuppositional. This Gordon Clark is sort of the leading proponent of this these days. Now, presuppositional is not my strong suit, but and therefore I don't really use it that much. And when I do, I use it in fundamentalism. I mean, not fundamentalism, foundationalism, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Presuppositional means that you have to agree to certain presuppositions or assumptions before any really good dialogue or successful dialogue can be entered into. In other words, before I will discuss with you whether or not God exists, since that's what you're challenging me with, we need to lay out some stuff that we can agree upon, you know, and evil exists, good exists, it's wrong to kill a baby, you know, for your pleasure. You know, these are the kind of things they might enter into to establish some assumptions. And they probably even wouldn't do that. They would probably just argue from these presuppositions. And you're presuming this, that, and the other. And they would argue, like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. And like I said, the example I just gave about laying out the babies, that's foundationalism. Now, let's talk about foundationalism because I understand it better. It's sort of a mix of presuppositionalism and evidentialism. So what it does is it takes, like I said, like the baby example and says, because we know that good exists and evil exists, do you agree with that? You know, it's wrong to kill a baby for your own pleasure. Okay, that's evil. We all agree that that's wrong. Because these moral truths exist, then we have to have a moral lawgiver. And your worldview, to use a sort of a apologetics term, doesn't, we'll talk about that, I guess, at a later time. But anyway, your explanation of the universe does not account for a moral lawgiver, an adequate one. And then the argument comes back, yes, it does. We have human experience over millions of years that have developed a human, you know, our human society, which has a collective understanding of what is good for us and what's bad for us or whatever. And so you would argue from there and back and forth. And that's sort of foundationalism. You establish a foundation to argue from, and then you pursue it. And you can pursue it through evidentialism, through evidence and through, you know, that kind of thing. Or you can, and you can pursue it through presuppositions. Okay, we already established our foundation. We're going to use those as our presuppositions, and we're going to move forward. And you can mix the two. And that's really, I think, that's why I think foundationalism is really the best. As far as really having a good conversation. I don't have any links for you on that. That one sort of came from a lecture. I can give you his name though. That's good. I'll give you the professor's name. Yes, his name is Dr. Ergun Kaner, and he teaches at Liberty University. And you can find him on iTunes. In iTunes University, the name of the class that I took is Apologetics 500. He also teaches another class called Philosophy 104 from Liberty University. Same guy. All right. Okay. So the next approach to apologetics is called experiential, which is not an experiment, but an experience. And you argue from your own experience. This is basically giving your testimony, you know, and saying this is there's sort of an idea out there that what we're really called to do is testify to what the Lord has done in your life, which is not a bad thing, and it can be powerful, but it can also be argued. It's weak in the sense that everybody has an experience. And in this day and time, especially, you know, in America, you're going to find that testifying doesn't work very well because of postmodernism. And that's fine. That's your truth. That's your experience. But let me tell you my experience, and it's completely opposite of yours, and it's just as valid. And even though they may not view it in those terms or even know what postmodernism is, they will have this idea that is being preached at them from, you know, just television and the way stories are told in movies and the way stories, the way art is and songs are. They're all expressing this idea that that experience is valid for each individual, but each individual then must travel their own journey, and it's the journey that matters, not the destination. That's all. So that sort of thinking, that postmodern thinking, really sort of counteracts experiential form of apologetics. However, this does work well with the rest of the world in the mission field. Testifying, giving your own testimony, is very powerful. And I don't know why that is. If it's just not affected as by postmodernism as we are, or you know, I don't know. When we go to Mexico, we often use this, and I've heard similar results from people who have used this successfully in other cultures. So now the last one is also I think weak. And that is pragmatic. The pragmatic approach to apologetics is basically what works. This system of ethics and principles laid out by the Bible works, and therefore it is valid. And the problem with that is that you may find another system that works for you. That system works for you. This system works for me. You see the same problem arising. Also, you find experience arguing against pragmatic arguments. You saying, well, look, you know, my uncle was sick with cancer and I prayed for him and he did die. He died anyway. And, you know, you can, an effective argument, an effective arguer of pragmatism can make mincemeat of that, but you've got to be good at it. And you've, and I think it leads you in the wrong direction because it leads to a very pragmatical sense of something that isn't really, that is spiritual in nature. And you, it only seem, I think the Christian walk only seems pragmatic in rear view mirror. And when it's explained to you by God as to what just happened in your life. And I don't know that it really would lead some, I mean, I don't know. I guess it, people use it that way, but for me, it's not the one I choose. But it does exist out there, and it, and I think that we're not, these different approaches, I think we have, each one of us that's going to use apologetics to defend the faith, either with either from within themselves or from outside to others. I think we all use some of these all the time. Okay, and for instance, I don't like experiential, the experience one, but I definitely use it internally because I know my own experience, and I will not doubt my own experience, no matter what somebody else is saying about their experience or their arguments, or no matter how strong their argument might seem, I can go, no, you know what? I know God is real because he did something in my life. It may not work in an argument against to you, but it strengthens me in my faith. And therefore, and then I'll use, and then I can go from there and find something that I can use externally or, you know, out loud to that person. So I think we use all of these, and I think they all have their right time. I think they all have their right place, and they're, that each approach is we'll probably mix them, but we'll probably have our favorites. I think there's times and places that each approach will work better, you know. And so there you have it. There are the five approaches to apologetics, and a little bit about how the, I guess how they're used and why. I guess that's all I have for today. I think that's quite enough. If you would like to make comments, ask questions, challenge me, tell me I'm not making any sense in a certain issue, or I'm not explaining enough here or there, or I'm not being clear, or, you know, whatever. I really need to know what I'm doing wrong so that I can become better at this. Please send me emails at brad.mcfadden. You know, don't worry about hurting my feelings. If you do, I'll get over it, and I won't be mad at you. but my feelings are not very easily hurt, especially in something like this where I'm prepared. I'm really prepared for criticism on this. I really want criticism on this. So it's brad.mcfadden@gmail.com. And I will talk to you next time. Vayos con Dios.